On tonight's show, we get transferred, body slam DEI hiring processes, and visit Shake Shack. That's right, we're talking about Muldrew v. City of St. Louis. Hello and good evening, wherever you are and whatever you're doing, and thank you for once again joining us here on Misbehaved Liberty. On April 17th, the Supreme Court potentially dealt a 9-0 blow to DEI hiring and promotion practices, which are currently trending amongst Western and especially American corporations. To be clear, DEI hiring and promotion programs exist outside the law. DEI programs, like ESG investing, are an offshoot of stakeholder capitalism, itself a Marxist wealth redistribution scheme dressed up in an appeal to history and with a call to action for what the World Economic Forum sees as a fairer, more equitable world, thrown in for a double dose of emotional manipulation. These theories of investing in corporate governance rely upon the acquiescence of an uninformed and disinterested investor class whose pooled resources give outsized influence to investment firms, and they also require the active participation of an overly emotional and guilt-ridden group of propagandized young to middle-aged professionals. The entire scheme exists outside of the law. It relies upon appeals to conscience to seduce a gullible public into supporting programs that are, at their core, inherently racist and anti-wealth generation. DEI hiring practices discriminate based on race, sex, sexual orientation, and in some cases, religious views. They do this not through open restrictions, but through the subversive language of inclusion. You will find no whites need not apply signs here, but you will find appeals of conscience in the form of we encourage traditionally marginalized peoples to apply notifications. Thus, these initiatives are able to skirt existing law by claiming it's not a racist scheme, but a means by which corporations can make their management teams more inclusive of traditionally underrepresented groups. But if all of this is outside the law, how does a ruling from the Supreme Court in an unrelated case have any impact? With the court's unanimous ruling in Muldrow v. City of St. Louis, the court has lowered the bar in what it takes to bring a Title VII suit. We'll get into the how and what this means, but first, let's take a look at Title VII and see what it's all about. Title VII makes it unlawful for an employer to fail or refuse to hire or discharge any individual or otherwise to discriminate against any individual with respect to his compensation, terms, conditions, or privileges of employment because of such individual's race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Legal gobbledygook. One sentence, 100 commas, am I right? Let's break it down. Title VII creates a cause of action, basically a theory to sue someone over, for employees that have had their jobs changed or altered because of their membership in a specific protected class. Everyone alive today is a member of multiple protected classes that are legally shielded from discriminatory practices. The classes enumerated by Title VII include sex, race, sexual orientation, religion, and national origin. It is illegal under Title VII to refuse to hire someone because they are white and male, as it is to refuse to hire someone because they are black and female. Prohibited activities under Title VII include changes or alterations to the terms, conditions, or privileges of employment. Importantly here, in Oncala versus Sundown Offshore Services Incorporated, the court found that the terms and conditions phrase is not used in the narrow contractual sense. Terms and conditions can include changes in responsibility, demotions, transfers, less pay, loss of perks such as access to an executive bathroom or a take-home vehicle, change or loss of expense accounts, etc. Title VII also makes it unlawful to fail or refuse to hire an otherwise qualified applicant based on their membership in a specific protected class. With respect to Muldrew, the case in question concerned Sergeant Jaytonia Claiborne Muldrew of the St. Louis Police Department. Sergeant Muldrew served as a plainclothes officer in the department's intelligence division from 2008 until 2017. As a result of her work with intelligence, Sergeant Muldrew worked with high-ranking officials, had FBI credentials due to the nature of her work, had a regular Monday to Friday schedule, had use of a take-home vehicle, and enjoyed the prestige that came with the position in the intelligence division. In 2017, against Muldrow's wishes and despite a glowing recommendation from her former commander in intelligence, the new intelligence division commander requested that Muldrew be transferred out of the division. The new commander requested a male officer that he felt would be a better fit with the unit's very dangerous work. The department approved the transfer. Muldrow was transferred to a uniformed position in the department's 5th District, where her duties were mostly administrative, overseeing that district's patrol officers, approving their arrests, reviewing their reports, and attending to the day-to-day minutiae of the district. Muldrow, furthermore, lost her FBI credentials, lost access to her take-home vehicle, lost access to high-ranking officials in the department, and no longer had a regular schedule. Muldrow sued the city and department under a Title VII theory, claiming that she had been transferred due to her sex and that the transfer had caused her harm. The district court granted the city summary judgment, ruling that Muldrow needed to show that her transfer affected a significant change in working conditions, producing material employment disadvantage. Muldrow, the court held, could not meet that heightened injury standard. The 8th Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the district court's ruling, holding that Muldrew had to, but could not, show that her transfer caused a materially significant disadvantage. Likewise, the 8th Circuit emphasized that the transfer did not result in a decrease or loss in salary or benefits. The Supreme Court reversed the lower court's rulings, holding that the lower courts used a heightened standard of harm where none exists. The standard, as set forth by the Supreme Court, is that some harm must have resulted from the transfer, or the transfer must have left her worse off, but need not have left her significantly so. I'd like to take a moment here to mention Justice Kavanaugh's concurring opinion. While the court as a whole adopted a standard of some harm, Justice Kavanaugh agreed with the D.C. Circuit Court in Chambers v. District of Columbia, where that court found the harm is implied in the transfer made because of the membership of a protected class. He went on to point out that the some harm standard adopted by the majority seems to be a low enough bar where anyone who has been transferred because of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin should easily be able to show some additional harm, whether in money, time, satisfaction, schedule, career prospects, interest level, perks, professional relationships, networking opportunities, effects on family obligations, etc. Already testing the some harm rule for Muldrow, America First Legal's Center for Legal Equality filed an official complaint against Shake Shack with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Citing Muldrow, the complaint alleges that Shake Shack has engaged in discriminatory practices on the basis of race and/or sex to promote its DEI scheme. Citing Shake Shack's own publicly available documents, AFL lays out their argument, namely that Shake Shack's own documents show a continuing pattern of hiring and promotion practices based solely on the race and sex of applicants. Perhaps most importantly, Shake Shack reported in their Stand for Something Good 2022 summary that of 2.6 thousand internal promotions, 55% went to women and 77% went to people of color. Further, the document sets forth the following requirement. Shake Shack requires at least two underrepresented minorities, women, or people of color to be considered when hiring for leadership positions in our home office. Throughout their various publications, Shake Shack is not shy in stating that race and sex are considerations in their hiring and promotional practices. Indeed, they are proud of their commitment to their DEI scheme. What does all of this mean? Absolutely nothing. Hardly the death blow to the DEI schemes some would have you believe it is. The offices of the federal government are labyrinthian, non-Euclidean dungeon mazes where you are bounced month after month and year after year from one bureaucratic technocrat to the next. Here, where the EEOC is concerned, once a charge is filed under a Title VII claim, the EEOC has up to 180 days to investigate, mediate, or otherwise come to some resolution of an individual's case before issuing a notice of right to sue. Without a notice of right to sue, the aggrieved party won't be able to file a Title VII action in federal court. Title VII is a federal law, so violations of Title VII can't be heard in state courts. Did you notice what just happened there? Did you hear the loosey-goosey language that's going on? If we recall correctly, AFL said they filed a complaint. But the EEOC talks about filing charges, specifically if an employee feels that they've been discriminated against because of their membership in a protected class, they can file what's called a charge of discrimination with the EEOC. That charge must be filed within 60 days of the discriminatory event and must take the form of a signed statement outlining how one's employer, union, or labor organization engaged in employment discrimination. The document also requests that the EEOC take remedial action to correct the harm. So, what then did AFL do? They sent a registered letter to the director of the EEOC's New York District Office requesting that the EEOC open an investigation into Shake Shack based on the materials we just talked about. The EEOC is under no obligation and has no duty to address in any way the allegations contained within the letter, if for no other reason, the 60-day requirement has long since passed. In my opinion, there's one or two possible things going on here, and they're not mutually exclusive. First, coming on the heels of the Muldrow ruling, this raises the prestige and general awareness the public has of AFL. AFL is a registered 501c3 public charity, and as such, largely has to rely on fundraising and donations to operate. A press blitz crowing about filing a complaint against the specter of DEI, couched as it was in terms that a layperson may mistake for something greater, will undoubtedly aid in their fundraising goals. Secondly, and more importantly, they may be hoping that one or more potential complainants that were adversely affected by Shake Shack's DEI policies within the last 60 days will come forward. As it stands, with no complainant, there is no complaint. Look, the Muldrow ruling will have implications for DEI hiring and promotion policies. Just how serious those implications are won't be seen for some time. However, I'd like to end by saying this. If you work for an employer that hosts official networking events or seminars or luncheons, training events, professional organizations, so forth and so on, that are specifically tailored to certain employees at the price and the exclusion of others, I'd encourage you to contact your nearest EEOC office to speak with their representatives. Remember, the harm suffered only has to be some harm. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, please subscribe and consider leaving a like, and I look forward to reading your comments. Until next time, stay ungovernable and misbehave.